I'm here with the great Howard Tate, blues and soul artist, and making a comeback and performing here at the Folk Festival in Richmond, Virginia, the now Richmond Folk Festival. Used to be the International Folk Festival, and got to see him perform last night, enjoyed it very much. How you doing today, Mr. Tate?
I'm doing fine.
Good. You put on a very good show last night. It was really a joy watching
Thank you
perform.
Thank you.
You're a great showman. I love the part when you came out into the audience.
Yeah, it gives you that personal touch.
Yeah.
You know, to come out and kind of touch their hands and get close to them.
Right.
You know, I think it's a personal connection. And, you know, so I love doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were born in Macon, Georgia?
Well, I was born in a town called Elberton,
okay,
County, Georgia. But, you know, they always associate me with Macon.
Okay.
I guess because some of the greatest came out of Macon, James Brown and Little Richard and Otis Redding. You know, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Georgia is the main thing. We come from Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what was life like back then? You grew up listening to, were you in a musical family? Or?
Yes, well, my father was a preacher, and so I came up raised in the church, and I don't remember much about the South other than having migrated when I was about 4 years old.
Oh, so you weren't there very
long.
Yeah,
I wasn't there very long now.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, I was going to later on ask you about touring, but so you moved to Philly?
Moved to Philly, yes.
Okay.
Moved to Philly, as I said before. I was probably about 4 years old or five, and we migrated to Philly due to economical advantages as compared to the South was greater in the North than the South. Because my father, he was a sharecropper, you know.
Okay.
And there wasn't much money around.
Right.
Yeah.
So was he also a preacher in Philly too? Or?
Yes, he was a preacher in Philly, yes.
Okay.
And a preacher in the South.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you pretty much grew up in the church.
I grew up in the church.
Gospel music.
Yes, it was a must. You know, it wasn't if I wanted to, the choice was not mine. So I came up in the church, and so those old gospel songs and listening to the gospel groups, Dixie Hummingbirds and Soul Stirrers, I would hear them, and I fell in love with those great artists. And I think that's where my first interest in music started, you know, listening to those great songsters, and they were great, you know. You remember Sam Cooke, I'm sure, and Ira Tucker with the Dixie Hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Ira passed away a few months ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he passed away. I saw him over in Cognac, France.
Oh, okay.
He was on one of my shows over there a couple of years ago, and you know, great, one of the greatest I've ever heard. And I was so saddened by the news that he passed away a few months ago.
Yeah.
But they were the ones that were influential, that I fell in love with. And I wanted to actually imitate them and do all the things I heard them do, because they were so masterful in their artistry. And, you know, they could do magnificent things with their voices, and the falsetto and all that stuff. And I would try to imitate them as a child and make those runs. And the funny thing is I started getting pretty good at it. And my father would let me sing in the church every Sunday before he would bring the sermon. He would let me sing a song. And the audience really would get happy when I would sing, and my father said to me one day, he said, you know, you got a gift, because when you start singing and do that falsetto, people go to falling out on the floor shouting and all that, you know. So that was they were encouraging words to me, and he continued to let me sing, and I began to grow and grow and grow until I developed a pretty good voice, and I got better and better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that goes back to, if you do something, the more you do it, the better you get at it. Yeah.
So eventually you in your teens you joined a group, gospel group?
Yes, yes. In Philadelphia, yes, I continued to sing in the church. My father, he got connected with a Baptist church in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and they made him the assistant pastor. And the pastor and the founder of the church passed away. He died. And my father was promoted to the pastor. And he let me continue to sing. And one day a group came there to do a show, do a service in the afternoon. And this group was called the Bel Airs and Garnett Mims. I don't know if you heard of him. He was a lead singer with that group. And they heard me. I came up and sang a couple of songs before they came. Right. And they heard me, and they fell in love with my voice. And they said they wanted to talk to me about joining their group because they fell in love with that falsetto that I do.
Right.
And they considered it more like a Sam Cooke kind of sweet voice. And to make a long story short, I joined that group, and it led to my getting connected with Ragavoy and the first record I ever made with Verve, Ain't Nobody Home, and
right.
that was the growth process and how it happened.
Okay.
Yes.
So did you tour a lot back then with those singles? You had singles like where you mentioned Ain't Nobody Home.
I used to tour so much, I would get tired.
Yeah.
And say, Lord, when can I go home for some days? And Richmond, they used to come through Richmond. Richmond was on the circuit, and they used to call it the Chitlin' Circuit.
Yeah.
And we went in every state on the East Coast, going down all the way to Florida, and we would swing over and go through Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana, and we'd play all the big cities in these states. Mm-hmm. And we would work every city in these states all across the country, all the way to California.
Wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. all over the country. Mm-hmm. And we would go, the tours would consist of over 100 one-nighters in each tour that left New York and went out, mm-hmm. you know. I remember one tour was 115 one-nighters, me, B.B. King, and Duke Tex, and Mary Wells.
You with the greats.
Yeah, Aretha Franklin. We were all on that tour. But every tour that went out, all the artists that had hit records, you know, in that day, because our music was the thing in that day, we would all be on these tours, you know, and each one that went out, they would put 10 artists on that tour and one band that backed us all up out of New York. And, you know, it was, you toured so much, you got tired of touring,
right.
you
right.
know. But it was fun. I mean, it was fun and, you know, it was just so much traveling, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so much traveling.
What was it like then? Was it still... So, say, like, I guess you go from New York down south, you still had to deal with segregation and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
You know, you had to be very careful because once at night we were going through Mississippi, and it must have been about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we were tired, and, you know, you could drive your car on them tours, or they had a big luxury bus. Mm-hmm. You could ride the bus. Well, I rode the bus. The bus driver pulled in to gas up at this gas station. Well, it looked like it didn't look like no gas station. I didn't see but one pump there. But I saw a sign that said food. It looked like a little shack in an office. So I thought that, you know, we could go in and get something and bring it out and eat it on the bus as we went on down the highway. Well, when I went to the door and opened that door to go in there, a guy picked up a baseball bat. Hmm. Yeah, well, he was coming at me.
Yeah.
And the bus driver ran out and grabbed me. I didn't see him coming. Yeah. He grabbed me and pulled me back. Hmm. And he said to the man, said, Mister, he don't know. He didn't know. He didn't know. I think this was maybe the first time I was out on the big tours. I had Ain't Nobody Home. And then, like, the bus driver showed me the sign. blacks served at the window in the back. So that was a very frightening thing. And then I was more careful, and some hotels you couldn't stay at.
Right.
You know, and you know, you had to use different restrooms. You know, but things began to change with Martin Luther doing a lot of work. Things began to change, but you had to be very careful, or you could get killed. It was a terrible times.
Yeah, I guess you never thought you'd be have a chance to vote for a black president back then, huh?
We come a long way. But Martin Luther started it all.
Yeah.
Yes, he started it all. Yes. No, I never thought this day would come when we may just have a black president.
Right.
Yes, yes.
So you did. You had hits like Ain't Nobody Home and Stop and Get It While You Can.
Get It While You Can, Look at Granny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and These Are the Things. And we had quite a few hits, and you know, but I never really got my due, you know, and that's I attribute that, a lot of that, to being a black man during that time, and we didn't get paid, you know.
They, I hear so much of that, you know.
They took the money, right? They took the money. I was talking to Benny King a few months ago. We did a date together in New York. You heard of Benny King,
right?
Of course. And same thing happened to him. You know, the same thing happened to James King, took King Records. They took so much money from that man. It was a thing where they just didn't pay blacks.
Right.
They took the money.
Yeah, but James Brown got really protective and started his own thing.
Yes, he did. Yeah, James made a move.
Records.
Yes. He made a move to where he could get his money, but he never got that money King took from him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he never got it. Hank Ballard. You know, they
just...
He has
great songs, yeah. And he just...
sold millions and millions. Yeah. And they took the money. Just out and out took it. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they did. It wasn't just me. It was all artists, black artists. Look at the Temptations. And the Tops.
Right.
You know. And other than Diana Ross, the other two girls, you know, they just took that money.
Right.
And the bad thing about that is Barry was a black man.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you're working for a black company.
It's unbelievable, you know.
Yeah. So, you pretty much got despondent about that. And
well, I got despondent. I was so depressed. I walked away from it because I couldn't get paid. And then, a guy that drove for the Spaniels, a doo-wop group back in the day, told me, he said, well, Howard, I know somebody can get your money for you. I said, are you kidding me? He said, no. He said, some friends of mine, said, I do a lot of work for Lloyd Price. I said, really? I said, you think they could get my money for me? He said, yeah. Let me introduce you to him. So I went to New York with him, and he introduced me to Lloyd Price's partner. They were partners. They had a nightclub in New York called the Turntable. And I met him, and he said, well, I can get your money for you. I didn't know these people. I had no idea who they were. Or I would have never in a million years associated with them because, you know, I'm not about violence.
Right.
You know, and so to make a long story short, he ended up getting killed. You know, and when that happened, and the way he got killed, and I didn't understand it, it seemed like it was a gangster hit. I said, well, I'm not getting paid, and here this type of thing is happening, then I'm just going to walk away from it. Yeah, and that's what I did. I was gone over 30 years, and, you know, I just didn't want anything to do with the music business anymore, and I finally... that led to depression and drugs. And, well, you know, drugs bring you down so low that you just can't go any further. That led to homelessness and everything. And you know, because I would remember how lucky I was to have recorded those great records, Ain't Nobody Home, and Get It While You Can, and Stop. And, you know, because many singers can sing all they like and either don't get connected with the right people or either don't get the right material to record that connect with the people And here I am, first time out when ain't nobody home. She went right up the charts. Mm-hmm. And come right back with Granny, she went right up the charts and stopped. Went right up the charts overnight. So I was lucky, and still I didn't get the money. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the money. Now, how many chances can a person get?
Right.
You know. So that was a very depressing time for me. That's why I stayed away from the business for over 30 years. But when I got hooked on the drugs, I couldn't find any way out. I really never thought, as I said last night at the show, I would ever escape the drugs. Mm-hmm. Because when you're addicted to drugs, you can't get off them drugs.
Right.
Unless by a miracle. The only miracle I know that has ever happened to me was Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. You know. And I kid you not, I got down so low until I laid out on the Lord, and I called on the Lord one day, and he set me free. It was a process.
Right.
And I know we don't have time to go through all of it now, but he indeed set me free from those drugs. And I haven't looked back. I haven't craved them, you know. Well, when he first freed me from them, the addiction would come upon me. Well, I know what it was now.
Right.
It was the devil tempting me to go back on the drugs. But, you know, I fought the fight, and I guess God wanted to see whether I was going to lean on him and keep leaning on him until he strengthened me to the point where I was strong enough to resist the temptation. And I stood and I fought the fight, and when I would be tempted, I'd pray. And I'd ask the Lord to strengthen me. And sometimes I'd wake up at night in a cold sweat, you know, wanting the drugs so bad. But I would pray.
Right.
I'd keep praying. And soon the temptation would leave me. I would dream of seeing the white powder and all those kind of things. And anything white I would see, you know, like go in a restaurant and you see salt white, you know, the temptation would hit me. But I would pray, and God would remove it. And that was a mighty, mighty miracle. So when God freed me that way, I was so happy until I wanted to share it. And so I would go around and tell people, and I would I would start doing volunteer work and telling people what God had done for me, you know. And one day, I was in a supermarket. It was Thanksgiving. And Ron Kennedy, who sang with Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes,
right,
saw me in the supermarket. And he said to me, "They got it out that you're dead. You don't look dead to me." He said, "Do you know people all over the world is looking for you?" I didn't believe him. I thought he was making conversation. But I gave him my contact info, and he had told me a disc jockey by the name of Phil Kasdan was looking for me. And he said, "I'm going to have Phil call you." I said, "Well, all right, Ron, you do that." And sure enough, a couple of days later, I got this phone call. It was Phil Kasdan. We agreed to meet for dinner, and I said, "Well, since it was Ron who connected me with you, why don't we have Ron join us?" So we three met, and Phil was taking these pictures, and I was wondering why he was taking these pictures. And I said, "Well, he's probably going to keep them, you know, probably put them in some kind of book that he keeps pictures in and all." Well, when I got back home that night, about, I guess maybe 30, 45 minutes, I get this call from Vibrations magazine in Paris, France. This writer is calling me because Phil had went on the internet and posted in some chat room, "I just found Howard Tate." And this vibration guy said to me, said, look, when can I, I'll come to the States and I want to meet with you, want to do a story on you. And she said, can I come next week? Well, you know, I almost fell out of the chair. Because I was wondering, why would they be interested in me? I didn't even know they had heard my records across the waters, you know. I'd never been to Europe. And I thought it was just a thing in the United States.
There's a huge resurgence in Europe of
yeah,
soul and funk music.
Exactly. Yeah. We hung up in another about another hour. Here comes another phone call from London, England. Another journalist. What was the name of that magazine? It's a very popular magazine all over the world. He says the same thing. He says, I'm going to be in New York in a couple of days. And I want to drive down to your house and do a story on you. They were calling me from all over the country. You know, I got a call from Australia that night. So this, I don't know what room Phil went on the internet, but they picked it up right away.
Right.
And they were jockeying to get these appointments to write because it was in, what was that magazine, Larry, that had it out that I was dead? That big magazine.
Was it Rolling Stone or?
Not Rolling Stone, but it was a big one. The one that had it in there, that Get It While You Can, was one of the greatest
albums.
You're
in the States? Huh? You're in the States?
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, yeah. Anyway.
I think it was Rolling Stone. I think he's right. I thought it was Rolling Stone.
I don't know, well, one of them. But, so, all this interest. And then, I'm now a minister. God had called me to the ministry, and I was a chaplain up at the hospital. So the next day I went to the hospital. I was on duty, and when I got back, I had opened up a home where I had maybe five extra rooms in there, and I would take in people that was in trouble and try to help them by sharing my story and counseling them to get them free from drugs. I didn't allow them to have no drugs or no alcohol in the house. So when I got back, one of them said to me, said, Reverend, says, a guy named Jerry is calling you. I said, I don't know no Jerry. You must be mistaken. And he said, no, a guy named Jerry. And he said he was a friend of yours. I said, no, I don't know no Jerry. Male or female, I don't know no Jerry. So after going back and forth with him about 15, 20 minutes, phone rang. And I said, hello? And he said, hello. I said, who is this? He said, Jerry Ragaboy. Well, I once again almost fell out of the chair. He had picked it up. And the way he picked it up, the journalist from Paris, France, had called him to ask him how was it that he found me and to record the great songs that I had recorded. And he said, well, what do you want, why do you want to know that? He said, well, I'm doing a story on Howard Tate. He said, Howard Tate's dead.
Oh, man,
he said, I've been looking, said, I was looking for him for over 20 years. Said, I called every Tate in Texas and Florida, and he's dead. The journalist told him, see, he's not dead, I just talked to him. So Ragaboy did. He said, well, give me the number, because I'm looking for him too. The journalist gave him the number. Now he's calling me. He wants to get right in the studio. You know? So that's how the comeback came. And I hadn't decided to come back, but I was thinking, if I could help people on a small basis, if I could come back and make some money, I could probably help many more.
Right.
And if that didn't occur, just going and doing festivals and going around the country, I do a lot of work in Europe and Asia. I can spread the good news of what happened to me, like I did that speech I gave last night. I do that on all my dates because you never know how many out there got problems.
Right.
You know, it don't all have to be drugs. It could be financial problems, domestic problems, all kinds of problems, you know, and they need to know there's help and where you can get it at. So even if I could do that in all the travels, and I travel a lot, then my job is done.
Right.
You know, even if I don't make enough money to open up a rehab, which is my dream, you know, if I don't make enough money to get to formulate something to house maybe 30 people, and you know, mm-hmm. and sleep them and keep them contained and help them through their struggles, because that's the greatest fight you're ever gonna fight,
right.
Trying to come off a drug.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you got to have the Lord to bring you off of them, because you got to separate yourself from all of them people, places, and things. You got to completely separate yourself, you know, and it's a tough fight. Then it's almost like, you know, a head going cold turkey, a heroin addict, you know. You got to be locked in a room, you know, with no windows and the doors bolted, and you just got to go through that pain and suffer for Lord knows how many days. Until you go through it, you know, and then you're not puking no more, and your guts are not twisting up, and you think you're gonna die. It's the toughest fight you're ever gonna fight.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the thing, and that's why I came back, and so I try to accomplish what I promised God. I promised Him that I would try to help people because of what He done for me. Brother, He did a big thing for me. Let me tell you something. I never thought in a million years I would ever be free of drugs. I remember one night I sat on a step. And I said, Lord, I know I'm going to die. My guts, I was hurting so bad. I had been hitting that pipe. I was hurting so bad. And I said, I know my family, they're never going to see me alive no more because somebody's going to cut my throat or shoot me in the head, because the kind of neighborhoods I was hanging out in and going to buy drugs and stuff, they would hit you upside your head with a brick for one $5 bag of coke,
right.
You know. So I didn't see no escape, but it shows you the power of God, and you know, and that He can do anything. He set me free. I should be dead and gone, but here I am. And to top that off, still got the voice.
Yeah, you do.
Can
have
you
voice.
Imagine that? After all that drugging and stuff, still got the voice. Now, I don't know if God re-energized the voice or what, but it's a miracle that I can still sing.
I was listening to hit some of those falsettos last night. I was pretty
impressed.
It's
unbelievable. Yes.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. But it's what God can do, you know.
Yeah. So you recorded, was Rediscovered your comeback?
Rediscovered was the comeback.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, coming back with these records, you know, times have changed.
Yeah.
And the music business and the music have changed. The music go through trends. I think you had the disco came in and now you got hip-hop in, and, you know, so, you know, you got to be very lucky today to get something to break through. But you never know what on a CD, what may take up
right.
and break through. And I'm trying to get one to do that so that I can help others. Because my love is helping people. I do volunteer work now. I conduct services. I go to nursing homes, hospitals, you know, trying to fulfill the needs of the people. Because in nursing homes, you got people who put their loved ones in nursing homes and forget about them. And they're so pitiful and sad. And you know, the joy they get when I go in and other ministers go in, spend time with them, conduct services. You know, it's unimaginable. And many times they tell me that, you know, I see them when I go in, they're in tears. I said, well, why are you crying? She said, Reverend, our family don't come see me. I said, well, how often do they come? She said, I haven't seen them in 3-4 months. Mm-hmm. Yet my daughter. Unbelievable.
Right. Yeah.
But I talked to them for a while, and you can see the joy coming back in their eyes.
Right.
You know. So, you know, I get fed by them being, by the happiness that God give them through me. Mm-hmm. I get fed because it makes me happy to know that I'm doing some good, you know. And, you know, and then sometimes you go and they're sick, you know, in the hospitals. Some of them going in to be operated on, scared to death,
yeah,
petrified. But you know, they, when I lay hands on them, pray for them, you can see the fear leave them. Now that's God, it's not me, you know. But it gives me so much joy to know that I serve such a powerful God that he's able to lift that fear off of them and put their trust in the Lord.
Okay.
You know. And that's what I tell them, look, I'm praying for God to take you in and God to bring you out. Because if he don't do that, you know, you won't come out. But he's able to do that. Believe that in your heart and commit yourself to him, you know. And when I leave there, they're okay.
Yeah.
You know, they're okay. But God strengthens them, you know, because they're scared to death.
Just need to see that somebody cares.
You know? That's right. Yeah. So that's what I do. When I'm not singing, that's what I do. I volunteer. I don't get paid for it. But I don't want any pay here on the earth. I'll get my reward when I see Jesus, you know. So that's what I'm about now, you know. And it's better today than it was when I was a young man and made those records, you know. It's better because I can still sing, and I got something better than I had back there because I wasn't saved back there.
Yeah.
You know, I was running wild back there, and but now I'm no longer running wild. I'm running for the Lord, you know, and I'm no longer a prisoner to drugs, because drug addicts are prisoners. You know, we're in our prisons all over the country. They're filled, running over. Yeah. You read where they sleep, got them sleeping on the floors, can't even house them, there's so many. And most of the prisoners are black.
Yeah.
You know. And, but 99% of them are in there because of drug-related crimes. Drugs. All the people in trouble in this day is 99% drug-related. You know, it's a big, big problem. Every homeless person have been come down to that level because of drugs. So that means the work is done. You know, there's a lot of work to be done.
Right.
Not just in this country, all over the world. When I talk in Japan and in Tokyo and in England and Norway and Sweden and Italy and France, they come to me and say, they got the same problems. So God has blessed me that I can do this work all over the world, you know, and gives me a lot of joy. I know I've talked your head off.
No, no problem.
But I just thought I'd go through it, and I'll let you get back to anything that you might want to.
Oh, no, you were doing fine. It's fine. I just want to mention so your latest records are Rediscovered and Howard Tate Live.
Yes,
and
yes.
Your newest one, Blue Day.
Blue Day, yes.
Yeah.
Blue Day.
Now, was that, did you also do that with
John Tibbetts?
Okay.
Yes, I did that with John Tibbetts. And we really worked together good as a team. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Blue Day. I think Blue Day is a good. Do you have a copy of it?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
I have some of your older music on that one.
Well, we'll give you a copy.
Okay.
We got a copy. We'll give it to you. Blue Day is a good record, and hopefully, you know, this may be the one to increase the financial ability that I'm looking for to expand this ministry that I so love.
Right.
Mm-hmm. John Tibbetts and I, we did that record in Nashville, Tennessee. And the first time I ever worked with John. But as a team, we really worked well together.
Right.
Yeah. He was supposed to be here. He took sick and he couldn't make the team.
Okay.
But he was supposed to be here.
You mentioned Nashville. I talked to some of my friends who were surprised how much black music actually comes out of Nashville, especially a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, everybody associates it with country music, but
I didn't know that Stack had this studio in Nashville.
Yeah.
And I was there recording, and John was in the car driving, and so we went by there. It's now it's a museum.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand Stack has reopened there. Maybe they're trying to come back.
Yeah.
But
they were releasing a lot of their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you do a lot of touring in Europe. How are you received there? It's like I was saying, there's a big resurgence in the soul and funk and just jazz and whatever, all black. In fact, there are a lot of white musicians doing soul music there now.
They love soul music.
Yeah.
The Europeans and the Asians and down under, they love soul music.
Yeah.
Soul music over there is like hip-hop is here. Yeah. Over there, they think I'm a king. I tell them I'm not a king. Jesus is a king, but I'm certainly not a king. But that's how much they love soul music.
Right.
Yes. I do so much work over there. You know, last year I was in Europe 4 times. all from one country to another. One country to another. Germany, France, Italy, Denmark. Norway, Sweden, Switzerland.
So are you enjoying touring much more now than you were before?
Yes, yes. Because I can see the wonderful works that God created, and not just America, but all these other countries, and how they work, and how their systems work, and their governments work. And, you look at the big picture, and you understand politics, you may say, like we get ready to vote for another president. And, you can get the different world opinions, and you can see how this country operates in the world. And you learn a lot. You know, they keep us ignorant, as to what's going on in the rest of the world.
Right.
And they paint these other countries as villains. But when you travel to these countries, you spend time in there, you learn the truth.
Right.
And you learn that our government tell us a lot of lies. Well, Americans know it now because of this financial collapse of their Wall Street.
But, affecting everybody in the world, man.
Yeah, but they've been lying to us.
Yeah.
They've been lying to us. But see, we've been the bullies on the block all over in Europe and Asia, all over the world. We have bullied these countries. And you know what? The bottom line is they're just not going to take it no more.
Right.
They're saying, well, we don't need America. They have to import everything from us. They don't produce nothing no more.
Mm-hmm.
They got to buy all this oil from us. Them corporations moving out of America, producing things, moving over here so they can turn a profit. See? So they don't produce nothing. They got to import everything. So what do we need America for?
Yeah.
So they're not going to let us bully them no more. See, this country's been bullying them and taking what they want and getting their way. But most Americans who don't travel don't know that. Because they only know what our government put in the press, what our government tell them. They don't know. You got to be able to look at both sides and look at the issues to know and differentiate what is the truth.
Right.
See, I was shocked some of the things I learned. Yeah. I've talked to some very high ups in those countries, and you learn some things that you have to say, what?
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
Our government is telling us one thing because they want to tell us what they want to tell us. And and push that up in our head. And you find out it was not that way at all. The dollar is worth nothing over there when you exchange. My last time I was over there, I think I got 51 cent.
Yeah, I
on a dollar.
I try. Sometimes I'll buy music from overseas, yeah, and yeah. I'll look at my bill like, whoa.
Yeah,
you know?
Yes. Maybe the euro. The euro is strong.
Yeah.
The euro is strong, but the dollar ain't worth nothing.
Yeah.
The other countries don't want to take the dollar no more, and you know, they can't get enough gold to ship for all the billions of dollars that they got to use to import.
Right.
So we're in a crunch. If they don't want to ship commodities to this country and get paid with the dollar, because the dollar ain't worth nothing.
Right.
They'll take gold. But how are you going to get enough gold over there to pay all that billions of dollars? So we're in a fix.
Yeah.
Simply because our government has been lying to us. Well, just like they've been lying to us about the state of the economy, the healthy state of the economy strong. They've been lying to the world, too, on the political front. One example is, and I know I've been going on and on,
oh,
is that lie we went into Iraq with. Can you imagine a president telling a lie like that and taking our boys to war?
Huh? Yeah, I mean, these guys, yeah, I haven't really bothered me that these young guys are willing to put their life on the line. You know?
Right.
It's got to be for a good reason.
They believed him.
Yeah.
They believed him when he said that man had was near complete nuclear weapons and he had all these things that was a danger to us and he was in back of the terrorists. Mm. And come to find out, he was in back of nothing.
Terrorists didn't want anything to do with him.
No, they didn't want nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And he didn't have no weapons that was no kind of threat to us.
Yeah.
And he took us to war. All them boys, young kids that hadn't even lived, you know.
And so now, that's kind of interesting that you get to learn all this stuff. You have to go out of the country.
Yes,
you're traveling to tour, and you get to find all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to be over there sometime. You have to travel in and out of these countries, you know, enough to pick up these things and see how the governments function. Over in Denmark, the senior citizen, when they turn 65, they don't get Social Security checks. The government put them in a new condominium. They bill them in blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And take care of everything for them. They pay all the bills. They buy all the food. They furnish it for them. All they have to do is live there. And every month, they make out their list what they need. Government bring it in. They have new appliances. All the furniture, government buy. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to worry about nothing. They don't have to worry about transportation. Government take them. I didn't believe this. And they took me, you understand,
mm-hmm.
to the state buildings and showed me and then took me over to look at the condos, you know, senior citizens. They're brand new. They build them in blocks. They know how many coming out on retirement each year. And they build these blocks like we build these houses, you know, when they build. Well, they do the same thing, but they build these blocks of condos. And as these people retire, they move them into these condos. And that's their condo until they die. They don't pay nothing, no utilities. Hmm. They don't pay no cost to be there. That's government taking care of them. That's their retirement system. Our retirement system with Social Security, for our seniors, you can't even live on it.
Yeah.
If you don't have a pension, you're in trouble. Yeah. So you learn all of this when you travel.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Okay. So, once again, you have your new CD, Blue Day.
Blue Day, yes.
Yeah. And I'll be playing that on the show. And also on our website, I'll put a post for your website.
Give me that CD, Larry. Blue Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll put a post for your website so people can go and read about you and see some of your other recordings.
Okay.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you doing this. And
yeah, I just hope I didn't digress too much.
No, that's fine. I like listening to people tell me things like that. And once again, I appreciate you doing this very much. And once again, you've been listening to the great Howard Tate, soul and blues artist and gospel artist. Are you thinking about doing any more gospel?
Yes. Yes, I'd like to do a gospel album, Garnett Mims just did a gospel album. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about him and I, maybe, and maybe we talk to Al Green and three of us could get together and do a gospel album.
Yeah.
He's a preacher also.
Right.
And maybe we three could get together and do a gospel album. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in doing a gospel album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've got one gospel song on Blue Day. Mm-hmm. If God brought you to it, he'll get you through it.
I'll listen to some clips from that.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Enjoy talking to you. Enjoy listening to you.
Same.